This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. On the November 3rd ballot, voters in the Indiana House District 19 will get to see two candidates running for that particular seat at the State House. And we have one of the candidates with us to talk about it, State Representative Lisa Beck. She lives in Hebron, and she's representing a part of the South Lake County and other parts of the District 19 as well. And she won for and is up for re-election this time around. And Lisa, thank you for being with us on the program today.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, first, we have, of course, the COVID-19 pandemic that we're dealing with. What do you feel that you're doing this year because of the pandemic that you did not do in the last election 2 years ago?
Well, I think the COVID pandemic, I think what it did was it exposed a lot of the maybe some of the issues that we didn't know we had because we were kind of going along in the economy. So I think there's two issues. One of them is, I just want to say as a state legislature, of course, a large part of the role is enacting legislation, but it also is helping constituents navigate through the system.
Right.
And I think when COVID-19 happened, you know, even talking outside of campaigning, you know, I was helping people with unemployment, helping people with small businesses. We created the Northwest Indiana Small Business Task Force, which both of the mayors, both Mayor Uran from Crown Point and Mayor Senecor from Hobart, all three chambers, the Small Business Development Center, who the executive director is Lori Felt. We had one of the banks, First Financial Bank, and some of the small business owners, Purdue Extension. We had quite a few stakeholders that were involved in it. And we really worked for two parts. One of them was to try to make sure that our local small businesses had whatever was available through the EIDL loans, the PPP loans. Later, the governor had the restart program. You know, I wrote letters to the governor asking him, actually, in the very beginning, before we were even a state that was certified to do the EIDL loans, I asked him if he would, you know, get Indiana certified. So another letter I wrote was I asked for a program similar to what the restart program was, but it was based on other states that have programs, grant programs for small businesses that have gone through, you know, I mean, something like this is something that we've never seen before, you know, a COVID pandemic. So, you know, how do we help small businesses? And that was something that we were doing. On the other side, we also wanted to make sure that we gave out accurate information. So we had many different speakers, but we always made sure that we had experts in the field. Some of the experts that we had was one of my favorites. We had Amanda Brinkman, who is a co-host of a cable TV show called Small Business Revolution. She does marketing, and she goes into small towns with her TV crew, and they help small businesses in a small town. She loved small businesses. So I had reached out to her, and she loved Crown Point, loved Hobart, the downtown feel, and came on our show and talked for about 45 minutes about two small business owners about what they could do in the middle of the pandemic. And one of the big issues in the very beginning when the governor shut us down was how do you stay in front of your customers when you're completely shut down? And she gave some really good advice on, you know, doing things to make sure that you're still in front of your customers, so that, you know, once we get outside of the pandemic. We also had Martin Anderson, who is the deputy director of the Indianapolis Small Business Administration office, and he came on and talked about PPP loans and EIDL loans. There was a lot of confusion because in the beginning when everything, I mean, this just happened so fast, there were a lot of tweaks to the law that had to be made, and, you know, a lot of small business owners were confused. You know, for instance, with the EIDL loan, originally there was a $10,000 that you could get that was basically money that you didn't have to pay back. And then later that changed. It was $1,000 per employee. So we made sure that small business owners knew what the changes were and how we could help them get information. One of the other things that we had on with the small business, a lot of small business owners maybe they have a bank that they deal with on a regular basis, but if it's maybe just a business checking account, maybe they don't take out loans on a regular basis. You know, the level is not they're not working with them on a regular basis. When the PPP loans came out, the banks were inundated, and we had people calling us and saying, my bank, I can't get a PPP loan through my bank. So we actually reached out, and we found some local banks, Jack Credit Union, that was willing to take on or do a PPP loan with a small business, even if they weren't necessarily a customer before this. So, you know, that was part of what we did with, like, what happened. You know, everything that I had planned for the summer as a state rep, some of the things that we had done based on, you know, you and I talked a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
There were things in 2018 that people had told me about that they cared about, and I was working on those issues. But once COVID happened, everything changed. You know, we had people calling and saying, you know, I haven't had a check for 11 weeks, and or I haven't had a check for 7 weeks, and help me get my unemployment. So we were calling, you know, trying to make those connections. You know, there was one issue that came up with a small business owner, and he had an issue, called downstate to the agency, and I literally was talking to somebody, and I said, is there a supervisor? And the person said no, and I realized they were in their living room. So, you know, the state had shut down, and a lot of the workers had gone home, and they're now sitting in their living room working from home, and I'm asking this person for help for one of my small business owners, and this guy's sitting in his living room. So, you know, it was a completely different playing field, I think.
Did that person, by the way, get the help that he had asked for, even though you had to deal with a supervisor or a staff member who's working remotely?
Oh, yeah. We ended up, I think I ended up talking to the lobbyist, the liaison that we have with the government agencies, mm-hmm. and we got that straightened out. In fact, there were other people across, other business owners across the state who had the same issue. And I will tell you, something else that was really helpful with our small business task force, I had the Indiana Restaurant and Association come on, and they talked about from a statewide level what they were saying, you know, because even though there were a lot of similarities with small businesses, depending on the area where your small business is located, like Indianapolis had maybe a little, some things that were different. We had some similarities, but we had some differences. So having them come on and having our small business owners get to ask questions so that, I mean, they're lobbying for the whole state. And so I felt like that was really helpful for us that we got our voice was heard with Indiana restaurants, which was really helpful.
Now, we know that obviously the COVID-19 pandemic didn't come in on purpose to be able to make it difficult or easy for candidates running for public office, and in your case, running for re-election from a House district that you represent. But have you found that maybe that the changes in campaigning because of the pandemic might have made it easier?
I think the one thing that I missed the most was having a celebration, mm-hmm. having a party. You know, I think, you know, when you're running for office, periodically we would have, you know, an event where we invite people, and that was kind of limited this time. And I think that really kind of limits the excitement. I mean, believe it or not, I think we had some fun events last time in 2018. We had a couple events where we just had a barbecue, and we had people, you know, we invited people from the neighborhood to come out and come and talk to me, and, you know, we couldn't do that this time because we did have one event that was kind of fun. We called it a drive-up, so we invited people to come out and just canvass with us in the morning, and then afterwards we invited them back for a drive-up, and we had a picnic. We barbecued, and then we just had all the food was put into a lunch bag, and then people came and just picked up a lunch bag and drove away. So, I mean, we were COVID conscious, mm-hmm. but we also tried to have some fun with campaigning. But, you know, with campaigning directly, I went ahead and I knocked on doors, and I wore a mask, and I, you know, if somebody didn't want to come to the door or open the door, I talked through a lot of screens, and, you know, I was very respectful. And of course, I want to follow the guidelines that the governor's put out. So I wore a mask and talked to a lot of people and had a lot of really good conversations. I really like going to the door and talking to people because sometimes I think in the world that we live in, that we all live in, people are busy. They have children. They have maybe one or two jobs, unfortunately. And, you know, just reaching out sometimes is not possible. But I will tell you this, District 19 compared to some of the other districts, I get a lot of people that contact me on a regular basis, which I love. I mean, I would rather have somebody contact me and ask me a question than to not ask me a question. I have no idea that they may have, you know, a feeling for or against something that I'm doing. So I appreciate that.
We're talking with Lisa Beck. She is currently the state representative for House District 19, and she is running for re-election. Lisa, what are some of the issues that if you are re-elected to your seat in the state house, you have a chance to see ahead for the General Assembly in 2021, and some of the issues you would like to tackle for your constituents in the district?
Well, I already have some bills that I'm working on. I sat down with labor, and I have a bill that deals with recouping some of the costs. We're working on that right now. Another bill that I have, several bills, actually. I have one for fire and police, and then one that's a couple that are specific to fire. We're working on those bills. You know, they're in the draft. And, I mean, really, I think that what's really important about legislation is that it's not about the quantity of legislation. It's about the quality of legislation. And I think that, you know, a good bill is a bill that, like, right now what we're trying to do is find the people, the agencies or the the groups that are in line with us, you know, that we know that we can get on the same page, and then in the same time looking for what the resistance is going to be, because that's good law. When you have a bill that has been vetted and there is resistance and you've overcome the resistance, that's good law. And I just want to say there was a bill, probably the bill, I mean, there's a couple things that I'm proud of. I don't want to say it's something that I'm the most proud of.
Yeah.
But there was a bill that we got, some new law that we got passed, and it really affected Hobart. And the new law is this. Prior to, well, first of all, nationally, there is an issue with the big box stores. You know, they're doing these tax assessment appeals, and they're winning, and they're causing cities and towns across the country to have to pay back these exorbitant amounts. In our area, in House District 19, we've known that this is an issue that's been going on for at least 10 years. And we got legislation that is going to allow Hobart, instead of having to pay back the reassessment of the Southlake Mall, mm-hmm. which has been in the newspaper, instead of taking 3 years, they're going to have 7 years, which frees up their budget. And, you know, this is something that we did in February of 2020, before there was any talk about, you know, defunding and cutting budgets. We were already concerned about Hobart's budget, and that helped Hobart's budget. I mean, it's not going to be the end-all, but it definitely helped Hobart's budget. And I was really proud of that, because it was something that was bipartisan in order for it to get done. You know, Mayor Snedecor, who is supporting me in my reelection, I think working with him and working with some of the local, as well as the county officials to get that done, and officials across the state. I mean, the final line to get it across the line at the very end, I worked with a GOP senator in order to make it happen. So, you know, that's good legislation. There was resistance, but we got over the resistance, and we got good law passed that it's going to be helpful to Hobart.
Now, it's interesting you should mention that, because we know that you are a Democrat, a Democratic candidate for reelection. Mayor Snedecor is changed parties. He's a Republican now, but that obviously didn't make much difference, that the bipartisanship's still there, right?
No, I think I gained a lot of respect from Mayor Snedecor. I mean, actually, to tell you, it's kind of funny. When I was in the prosecutor's office sometime around 2005, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
it was my first felony trial. At the time, Mayor Snedecor was actually the chief of police, but he was a detective. The case had sat for a couple of years. I mean, by the time I went to trial, it had sat for a couple of years. He was the lead detective on that case, so I actually had worked with him, you know, a little bit. He was the chief of police at that time, so I do know him for quite a while. But I really got to know him this last 2 years, and, you know, we worked really well together, and I think, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but I think the bipartisan part of doing whatever it takes to get something done is something that I think we both respect in each other. I think that's what the constituents expect of me.
Lisa Beck is a Democrat. She is a state representative in House District 19. She is running for re-election. And Lisa, thank you for being with us, for talking with us about yourself and about the issues on the state legislative session. Thanks for coming up.
Thank you, Chris.
We're talking now with a former state representative who had the district seat and in turn is seeking it once again. We're talking to Julie Olthoff. She's a small business owner in the Crown Point area, and she's with us to talk about her experiences in the race in the past, what she looked to the future if she's reelected. And Julie, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, let me ask, since you had a chance to stick with the business, so to speak, here after 2018 and the election in that year, what are you hoping to do in your campaign to win the seat back again this year that maybe you haven't done in the past because of the coronavirus pandemic?
What I'm trying to do in this campaign that's different from before is point out that I really have some accomplishments that I'm proud of, and proud of carrying those bills through
mm-hmm.
the district. Now, how does a campaign work with COVID to me is another question. So with COVID, of course, the primary didn't end until June, so we were out late. I am knocking on doors. I figured this technique out. It's probably not that unique to anybody, but I put my card on the door, ring the doorbell, and stand 8 to 10 feet back. And so far, people have been very receptive. So we've been going door to door, face to face. I believe people need to look in my eyes and mm-hmm. see, you know, who are you, and can I trust you? I'm available door to door if somebody has a question on their mind, and I've had some really great conversations about what's on people's minds.
You mentioned at the outset of our conversation that you're focusing, of course, on your experience as a state lawmaker.
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about that experience when you last left the legislature. What were some of the things that you wanted to accomplish and you actually did accomplish for your constituents at the time?
Great question. First, I want to clarify how District 19 is Crown Point, mm-hmm. Winfield, keeping Lakes of Four Seasons together, so it has a piece of Porter County, Hobart moving north to Hobart, Merrillville moving north to Hobart, so east of Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty good chunk there. I was able to be lead author and write 6 new laws. All of them came from constituents here. A perfect example is when Merrillville found that daycare with guns, knives, and open alcohol, they were shocked. They didn't even know they were there, and they felt every daycare should be accountable to getting that business license. They cost $75 in the town of Merrillville, and this way, Merrillville sends the code officer. They make sure that a daycare is located in a proper neighborhood for traffic and safety of the children, and it's just a good space to operate. So I carried a bill for them that kind of flipped around how daycares apply to make sure that they have the approval of local authority. And if you're caught with mm-hmm. weapons, it's cause for immediate closure. And you can't reapply for a year. I also worked on No More Secrets. So that's a bill that Senator Frank Mervan had. It came from North Township. And so Senator Mervan, as you know, is a Democrat, longtime nice guy, legislator from our area. And when he looked over to the House of Representatives to find someone who could carry his bill for him, he picked me, the Republican from District 19, and I was able to get that heard in committee and signed on. And if you don't remember the No More Secrets, it's a little comparable to the DARE program where a police officer comes in just for one class a year in all grades and talks about don't do drugs. Well, this is about child abuse and sexual assault. And we speak to the students age appropriately, data driven, about things that they should be aware of, do's and don't do's. And I was so proud to get that done and handle that.
I recall when Senator Mervan was going around it when he first introduced the idea, and he was going around to schools around his district there and trying to get support for the idea. And, of course, finally bring it up as you helped him do in the General Assembly.
Yes, it's a wonderful thing and bipartisan. So, you know, Merrillville is more Democrat than Republican, but I have served on the Plan Commission and the Board of Zoning Appeals, and the Merrillville Chamber back in the day. And so I know all those guys. Like, I've served on those commissions for 15 years mm-hmm. and still sit on there now. I took a break when I went downstate, but then when I lost in 2018, they put me right back on. And I love it. I love working with economic development.
Is that one of the major issues that you see coming up in the General Assembly? And if you're elected back into the seat in the Indiana House that you want to pick up as a lawmaker once again?
Jobs.
Yes.
And jobs are tied to confidence. So we need to recharge our businesses. As you had said, I've owned a marketing firm here in Merrillville for 33 years. So through COVID, we knew, you know, I lived it, what it was like to move my staff working from home, how to get them technology so we can do that, and then how to bring them back into the office safely. How do you do sales and keep your business viable through COVID? So we figured out how to present proposals on Zoom and how to keep the work flowing and keep good communication going through the client, through the account executive, through the team here that would push the work out for them. Also, we need to skill up people so that when the employers are confident and can hire, they can hire people who are out there, people who lost their jobs due to COVID. There are many state initiatives that the governor has enacted, and to continue those through would be a great thing. There's job training free for people for different needs. There's just so much out there. It's hard to, mm-hmm. like, pick one thing. But if someone needs a job, they can go to the state and see what they can find to either skill up, change capacities, or try to find help to find a job right now.
Are there any other issues that if you're elected back into the General Assembly that you would want to tackle here in 2021?
Yeah, there's a lot of issues on people's minds. One is law and order. So through Black Lives Matter movement, through the riots, through the scary times we had over here, especially at the mall, that's my district.
Right.
We need to continue that conversation. And to me, riots and looting don't help move the conversation. It's just a shame how the businesses then have to fight to come back. And in Chicago, we've seen where some don't even want to come back. So anyway, when I was in office, one of the earlier years, I had a bill to get money for technology for the Law Enforcement Academy, which is housed right up here in Hobart, a best-kept secret of the area.
Mm-hmm.
And I teamed up my bill with Representative Price, who had a bill to get funding for body cams throughout the state. So I think we were a little bit ahead of our times. But this whole movement and racial tension has started the conversation. And do we need body cams? How do we get better training for our police officers? What is going on? What is needed? And to take a deep dive, look at that, and see what we can do to make it better. Everybody should be open to more training in my business. We are. Anything I can continue to learn to get better, any kind of skills we could do to get better, I don't know who would be against that. So law and order is another one of my top initiatives. Sexual assault has been a passion of mine since day one when I started running. And that issue, tied to Indiana behavioral health, is important to me. I was awarded by the school counselors for my work on a sweeping suicide prevention bill that turned into a new law. And with COVID, we've seen where it's been challenging. People have been isolated. People have to live with their families, which you think might be a good thing if you come from a good family, but it's a bad thing if you don't come from a good family. So people are exposed to bad situations. People don't like change. It's been hard. So the steps we've taken in the mental health arena, fighting addictions, fighting anger issues, fighting sexual assault, fighting suicide, that has all taken a step backwards in 2020. So I want to shore them up. I want to talk to the mental health providers, find out what the state can do to support them. Let's get back on track. Let's see what we can do to get people to feel better about themselves, better about the situations they're in. It's hard. People are hurting right now, and we need to talk about what can we do to get them healed and give them hope.
Well, it just sounds like there is a lot on the plate to consider, and obviously a lot of topics that you just mentioned, among others, I'm sure that will no doubt come up in the 2021 General Assembly session. And if you're chosen by the electorate to go back to Indianapolis again, some things that at least you know and that's on the list to be able to try to accomplish. And Julie, we thank you very much for spending time to talk about them today.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You have a good day.
Thank you. Julie Althoff is a Republican. She's the candidate on the ballot for Indiana House District 19. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. In the third part of our series on young Indiana activists, we meet Tashara Lyons, who is a college student working to protect a street that has historic significance for the Black community in Indianapolis.
I'm Tashara Lyons. I'm a senior at the University of Indianapolis. I've just helped to organize some protests, some vigils this past summer. Recently, I've kind of started talking with the Get Indiana Ave Back Coalition, just true community service and activism and what that looks like for Indianapolis and for Gen Z. So I was born here in Indianapolis. When I was younger, I actually moved to Georgia, and I lived in Georgia all the way up until about middle school, like 7th or 8th grade, and we moved back here. I think when I lived in Georgia, I was just used to seeing like Black people everywhere, literally in every aspect, like Black judges and HBCUs and Black police officers. Like, that was something that was normal to me. I never feel like there's an actual space for Black people here. A lot of neighborhoods have been gentrified in Indianapolis. I like the Indiana Ave campaign because it sheds a lot of light not only on what Indiana Avenue used to be, but also just shedding light on gentrification happening all over the city, which is important to like know and realize, because it's not just happening at Indiana Ave, it's happening all over. A lot of people, a lot of times, they're not aware. Like I said, I was not aware of what Indiana Avenue was. I was not aware, maybe until a couple years ago, that the Walker Theater was there. I completely forgot that Madam C.J. Walker moved here from St. Louis. That was something that it completely left from my mind. She came here because this is where all the Black entrepreneurs were. You don't see that. You don't see a bunch of Black entrepreneurs on Indiana Ave. You see white college students. Nothing that would indicate that Black people were ever there and ever occupying that space. And so that is what the protests are about, is to just give that information to the people so we can decide what we want to do with this. We don't want to sit on it because it's hurting us. It's hurting our families. It's hurting our neighborhood. It's hurting the community we've built. It's disenfranchising the people who have lived there for 50 plus years. And we can't let that continue. So what are we going to do? We can't erase the past. But what we can do is try and vote for pieces of legislature and try and put into perspective for people that this is not how things are supposed to be. Even if you just think to myself, oh, hey, I don't like policy, I don't really like politics. Okay, well, just think, is this right or is this wrong? If it's wrong, we need to vote in someone who is going to change it to make it right. This is the first presidential election I've ever been able to vote in. So I'm nervous about it. I want people to get out and vote. I want people to go to the polls. So I'm definitely watching policy about hate crimes, police brutality bills. I'm looking at stuff with climate change, healthcare, especially at this time. Healthcare is always a big one. There's never no work to be done. And so I think that's what we have to learn with democracy. It's not just a one and done thing. It's a process. It takes time. It takes voting. It takes your voice being heard. It's going to be hard sometimes. It's not an easy thing.
You can hear part four in our series tomorrow here on Regionally Speaking. It's time once again for Art on the Air Spotlight, and here is co-host Larry Brecker.
I would like to welcome back to Art on the Air Spotlight Tim King, who's the executive director for the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra. He's going to be talking about the upcoming season and maybe some of the things they've just done. Welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Well, thank you, Larry and Esther, for having me on. I really, really appreciate it. The show must go on, as they always say in the musical and theater world. So we have presented a concert at Friendship Gardens in Michigan City in August, and we presented a concert at Fox Park in LaPorte in September. We also had our Who's Your Star, which we live streamed for the first time, which was a little scary for this old man, but
it went well, though.
It went well, yeah.
The 30-somethings held my hand, and it was okay, so we got through it, thank goodness. It was a fascinating situation where we just had to use part of the orchestra, mostly a combo, but reached more people than ever before, thousands of people this time who watched it instead of coming to the Civic. So I think we've kind of convinced ourselves that when we go back to live performance at the Civic, we're probably going to stream it too.
I hope so.
That's a great idea.
You know, for grandmom who lives in California or whatever. So we're going to do that. So we're really happy with the way that turned out. And we just put online on www.lcso.net our educational video and education guide. Normally we do sets of concerts today. It's always the second Wednesday in October, but obviously we can't do that this year. So we've put on an educational video, about a 45-minute video, which we're very proud of. And we really want to encourage elementary educators 2 through 5 and music elementary educators to take advantage of the video and use it in their lessons plans and classes, as well as the education guide that accompanies it.
Is that the Drayton Children's Family Concert?
That is correct. Yeah. That is correct. That's normally there are 3 live concerts that we have, but we couldn't do that this year. But we are going to open our season on November the 7th, 7 p.m. at the Civic Auditorium. Because of the pandemic, we can't have nearly as many people as we'd like. So there's very few tables that we can put on the floor, very few seats that we can sell up in the audience. So the tables are gone, but we still have some seats left in the balcony if people would like that. It's going to be called the Great American Songbook. Of course, yeah. Your listeners probably know what that means, and that's the classic composers of the 20th century. We're really concentrating on 3. It will be Irving Berlin, George Gershwin, and Cole Porter, Indiana native Cole Porter. So basically the entire concert is going to be those 3 composers. And conducting that for us is our 5th music director candidate, Dr. Christopher Fashion. And Christopher is the director of orchestras at Hope College in Holland, Michigan, just up the road. So he was supposed to be conducting us back in April. And of course, we had to cancel that. So we've rescheduled it to this point in November. So if you would like tickets to that, you can go there and to our website at www.lcso.net, look for Great American Songbook and get the tickets. Plus, we haven't been for sure yet, but we think we're going to stream this one too, because we think there are still people out there that are still very hesitant. And I get that. Although we are going to follow every safety protocol like we always have before. We haven't made a firm decision on that yet, but that's our hope, is that we can.
I vote yes.
Yes.
I hope. Well, thank you. But, you know, ever since we did Who's Your Star, that's really kind of what took me over the hump there, was that it can be done and it still is worth it as far as the quality and stuff like that is concerned. So I think that's going to be the plan. We're going to make a decision later this week. So hopefully November the 7th with Christopher Fashion, the Great American Songbook at Civic Auditorium.
How have rehearsals been going during this time? How do you handle rehearsals?
Well, we haven't rehearsed yet for that, but we're going to be rehearsing at New Prairie High School for our first rehearsal. And their band room is so large that they do indoor marching drills. If you believe that.
Wow.
it's a new space. It's a new space. And so they have given us permission to use theirs as an indoor marching space. As a rehearsal space. So confident that we're going to have enough room to be able to social distance everybody. And of course, we'll wipe everything down before and after. And then we're going to do the rest of our rehearsals at the Civic Auditorium the week of the concert. We're going to have half the orchestra on the floor, half the orchestra on the stage. And again, everybody's 6 feet apart. The tables are all going to be 6 feet apart. And the people sitting in the balcony are going to be 6 feet apart. So that's why we can't have nearly as many people. And that's why we think the live stream probably is going to be a good idea.
Now, you have 2 other concerts scheduled this season. So tell us a little quickly about those.
We do. We have another concert in March, the 14th, which will also be at the Civic, which is another reschedule. Beethoven's belated 250th birthday now, with our 6th and final music director candidate, Dr. Wilbur Lynn. And then our last concert is April 17th, where we'll be inviting Gary Wado back. And Gary is a native of LaPorte who has this incredible history on him with conducting orchestras and operas all over the country, and has yet to come back to LaPorte to conduct. So we're going to welcome him back finally after all these years.
And any plans for Hoosier Star next year? You're going to try to do it live or streaming?
Yes, we are. That's the plan right now. Auditions are in March, the 20th and the 21st, I believe, or 21st and 22nd, here in LaPorte, and to have it the second Saturday in September, hopefully at the Civic Auditorium.
Very good. Well, this is our spotlight with Tim King of the LaPorte County Symphony Orchestra. You can find out information at lcso.net. Find out all about their concerts and their season. Thank you again for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight, Tim.
Always a pleasure, Tim.
It was a pleasure to be with you too as well. Thank you so much.
Art on the Air can be heard Sunday evenings at 7 o'clock here on Lakeshore Public Radio. That's it for Regionally Speaking for today. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Reporters Roundtable Thursday, and we have Times Chief Political Reporter Dan Carton and Post-Tribune columnist Jerry Davich. We hope you can join us for tomorrow's program.